urinating dogs, you scum-sucking pigs,
you sons of a motherless goat.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
Welcome in, everybody. It is Fuel, Unfiltered Automotive Truth. I am your host, Dennis Pitzenbarger, once again trying my hand at broadcast. And I'm doing a little bit different this time. We thought we'd put a video element into all this stuff and have a little fun with it. You know, as always, I'm just a guy who kind of wears his heart on his sleeve, and what I do and how I do it, who knows if it all works out. But I have a very special guest in my now new studio for Fuel, Mr. Steve Kelly. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Dennis?
You know, glad to have you here, man. You know, I'm going to dive right into a couple different things. And you may not know this of how I looked at you. You are, and I'm sure you had no idea it was, but you are my absolute nemesis at Woodburn Drag Strip. Did you know this?
I did not know that.
Okay. Let's transport back about 4.5 years ago. And okay. I had been around, I have gone and photoed you guys at Woodburn tons of times. I've got to do all this other cool stuff I've done in my life. We're going to skip all that. Doesn't matter. And I've had a ton of fun down at Woodburn, meeting all these great people and interviewing. And but about 4.5 years ago, I decide I'm going to be a race car driver. You know, I'm going to be a drag racer. Now, I've always wanted it, and I've taken other cars down the strip, but I always wanted to be, I wanted a real purpose-built race car. And I get really lucky, and I met through Robbie over at RPM Roll Bars, I met Jerry.
Okay.
Jerry's got the third gen for sale. I go over, I literally like blank the savings account. I have to do some negotiation with other cars.
As racers
as racers do. And the car comes home with me. Now, what do? I go down and I make a few test passes one day. This is the very first year. So I got the car about halfway through the season. And I show up at Night of Fire and I'm like, this stuff's easy, man. I mean, I go like rounds Friday. I go rounds Saturday. I'm in the finals against David, in the Gambler. I'm like, this stuff's, fuck, man. This shit's easy. And throughout all that, you know, I learned some valuable lessons. One, it is not easy. And two, it was like beginner's luck. So I have all this great success in the car, like literally won like, I think it was 6 or 7 rounds, like the first weekend I really go racing. I'm like, that's amazing. And then I start to realize now what other people saw. And you can confirm nor deny this, but I know Dennis the Duck was running around in the lanes at Pro. And I would roll up there and I was like, man, look at that badass Camaro, man. It's the right color. It's a silver. The guy who drives it, I know your name, Steve, but I don't know anything about you. Super nice, super polite. And I don't know if, do you know what our official record is? I know. Do you know what our head-to-head record is?
I have no idea unless I'm on the losing end of those things.
Well, until... Yeah,
I know you've beat me a couple times.
No, once.
Okay.
Once. Until the very last weekend of last year, my official record against, you know, king of the track, national champion, loved by everyone I know, hated by no one, Steve Kelly, my record was 0-10.
Oh, wow.
0-10.
I had no clue.
Yeah, so you were like this nemesis, and I kept telling myself, if I'm going to lose, because everybody's like, dude, that's Steve Kelly. He's the fucking great, you know, champion of the track. He's the fucking national event winner. He's fucking the guy's ace, man. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to lose, fuck it, I'm going to lose to the best guys out here. And it's not just you. I lost plenty of rounds to Stewart or Bryce or Dean or any of the, you know, Honey Bet, all those guys. Matt's put me on the trailer half a dozen times too. But if I'm gonna go up against the best, I'm gonna maybe hopefully learn. And I just kept getting my teeth knocked in. And so you fast forward to that one time, that one thing, and I made the video and I put it on the channel. It was like, I purposely said, like, I'm not picking on you, but it's the only time I beat one of you guys. And it was just, it was such a cool experience that I will always remember this. Here I am, this guy. I know you guys were looking at me like a duck. You can confirm nor deny it, but when you saw, I mean, I showed up in a pretty nice car. I never went to Sportsman. I never did. I just show up like, oh, yeah, I got some money. I bought a car. How did you guys, you can be honest, how did you guys view me? Because I'm a loudmouth. I know that. But when you looked at like this loudmouth kid who shows up with a pretty nice car, I mean, what's going through your head?
I might look at things a little bit differently. Yes, there's times when I would rather have one of those opponents.
That's fair.
But I also recognize anyone could put a lap down. And when there's a quality built car and you with your background, I'm thinking you know something about racing, right? So I don't know what I'm getting into exactly. And every round I go up there, I'm prepared to make the best run possible. If I know my opponent, I'll usually try to put together a strategy that will have the best chance for success against them as well. Not knowing my opponent, I'm focused on what I'm doing in my lane, and I don't take anything for granted. So okay. I wasn't thinking, you know, you're a duck or any of that other stuff. I actually appreciated your outwardness and your friendliness and your just being gregarious and friendly and, yeah. All those things. So no duck.
I think you're being nice. I just think you're being nice. I think deep down inside of people are like, not that it's a bad thing. I think a lot of people looked at it like you did. You knew. So I've driven some dirt cars. So I've done a few other things. But I had no idea what I was really getting into when it came to bracket racing.
Bracket racing is tough. People that don't get it, don't get it. It is difficult.
Yeah. We're talking thousands of a second when you're coming down to, especially things like national championships. So let's fast forward to the very last race of last year. I finally do it. I'm going to tell you right now, I could very seriously get emotional right now. I'm dead serious.
You did. I got to take a breath at the time. Yeah.
Oh, when that win light came on in my lane, I think I either laughed, cried, or shit my pants all at the same time, all the way back on the return road. I mean, people were walking up to me like, I mean, do you realize how respected you are in this sport? I mean, a lot of guys have a lot of respect for other drivers, and that is one of the beauties of the camaraderie of the racetrack. But seriously, man, like people were walking up and they were like, are you like grabbing me by the shoulders? Like, do you realize what you just did? And I'm still in disbelief. Like until I had the slip in my hand, I'm like, holy shit, dude. I beat Steve Kelly. Now, it was great. And I hope that we have many other runs against each other. Mm-hmm. But the funny part is I had not been that far in rounds ever, for starters.
Since Night of Fire.
Which, of course, Scott and Frank Pettit were really helping me at that point with my dial in and everything. So now the funny part, or the ironic part of that, is I then go ahead and I go up against Bryce in the finals, and I'm like so off in my dial because I'm like, oh yeah, the car speeds up when it gets colder. Oh yeah, I guess I should think about it.
Late in the day at Woodburn especially.
Yeah. So I had to touch on that because it really did mean a lot because, yes, again, I'm going to take a deep breath because I want to get emotional because it was emotional for me. One of the first people that came up to me was you. Mm-hmm. And I jokingly said something about you gave it to me and you looked right in my eyes and you're like, dude, no, you earned that, man.
You did.
And I just, it meant the world to me. It really did. I'm very OCD. I'm very much a perfectionist. I have already talked about going back to dirt at some time in my driving career. And I will not go back to dirt until I have some of the jewelry you have. Now, that means I may never go back to dirt. Maybe I'll get lucky. I don't know. But that being said, you know, that's just part of the story. Now, this is where I stop talking so much, because I want to go back to that Silver 67 was, I'm going to talk about the paint job it had before in a little bit of detail. Let's just say it's much prettier now, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole history behind this. This goes back to Dad. I don't know if your dad's still with us. Maybe he's up drag racing in heaven while my dad throws 6-pound tests in a creek and pulls 15-pound rainbows out of it. I don't know. But take us back to where all of this started for you, man.
Sure. Yeah, I was, well, first of all, growing up, we didn't have much money. So there wasn't, you know, car stuff and racing in our household early on. Both my parents, or my mom started working. So we had both my parents working when I was, you know, older, like 10 or so. By the time I was 12, Dad had a street El Camino that Uncle Mike talked him into going out and trying out at PIR. And so he did, and he had fun, and he did well. He immediately started doing well. And
now this was in pro or sportsman?
Yeah, street at the time.
Street, basically, okay.
Sportsman bracket, yeah. Okay. Back when. 14 seconds and slower.
Okay.
The quarter. And yeah, he just, I mean, you know, then it turned into getting a pair of slicks and, you know, all those things. And I was old enough at the time where we kind of learned together. Like, there were so many at the time slips were handwritten, and there weren't reaction times. So we couldn't understand how you could run closer to your dial in and your opponent still beat you to the finish line.
So you didn't have the data in front of you like that. You just, no, I don't know what he did.
Yeah, it was just written on the time slip. We were still learning. We thought that the track cheated us at a couple of times, you know, or cheated my dad. So it was, you know, it was a steep learning curve early on.
How old were you in that? What's that time frame? How old are you?
I was like 13 at the time. So this is, well, 13, 14, 15.
Okay.
Right in that range when he was really starting to learn. And then he took to it pretty quick. This is like 82. You know, he won the track championship in 83, 84, 85. Like he was really
just something clicked.
Yeah. Yeah. He won a lot of rounds, and mostly at PIR, but he also raced at Woodburn on the weekends and won a couple championships down there as well.
That's cool. That's
cool. But it was mostly all in a street car. He built a faster car in, you know, 86 when I was in the Air Force, essentially.
Okay.
But yeah, that's kind of how it all started.
Now, were you at that time when Dad? Now, was it always the El Camino at that point?
No, he changed to a 67 Chevelle.
Okay.
That's when he, that was probably 82, 83.
Now, was that the, as I was told, because I had a lot of people kind of give me some little, was that the infamous purple ish car?
It was burgundy. So that he had two of them. Yeah. Okay. The fast one he built when I was in the Air Force was the infamous one that most people probably remember that he did. But the one he, in my opinion, the one he won the most in was his street 67 Chevelle. He just built a carbon copy of it, same color and everything.
But more purpose-built race
car. Yeah, yeah, okay. It was like a high 10-second quarter-mile car.
What, out of those two cars, if you had a chance to go back, and I don't know, maybe they're still sitting in a garage somewhere, but if you had a chance... Well, first off, let me ask that question. Are those cars still around, or have they been sold and gone, or?
Yeah, the my car, I sold. So I bought his street car from him when I was in the Air Force and drove it out there and all that other stuff. I sold that basically when I got out of the Air Force in 1990, and I had to grow up and get a job and all that other stuff. I got a little Toyota pickup truck.
Oh!
I know, it was... It served me well. It was like a smart decision. So if there's any young people out there listening, it can't all be about racing. You have to get your career established. So,
well, and I'm going to be the devil on the other shoulder. Never fucking sell it. I'm just going to, that's got to be me. You know, he who dies with the most toys wins.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, like, I mean, that's why I didn't get to do any of this stuff till I was later in life. I mean, it's not like I got people that I work with that are 25, like, oh, you got all this stuff. I'm like, I'm 53 years old, man. I mean, it's about time I had all this stuff.
Yeah.
But no, keep going with that. So you're you're in the Air Force now, out of the Air Force, driving a little Toyota pickup truck. Where does racing start entering your life again?
Really in 93. So that was about 4 years after I got out. I bought a little street strip Vega from a guy named Lee Goranson. friend of dad's. Dad and him used to swap off paint jobs for engines, kind of a thing. Dad was the painter, and Lee was the engine builder. So really super cool Vega street strip car. I started racing and still was not that good. I mean, I'd win rounds just from knowledge that I gained racing with dad and those kind of things. But still just out there, you know, trying my best, learning and all that other stuff. So, and I actually wrecked that car in 95 on the street, screwing around and
oops.
Yeah, it was, that was a bad deal. That's a definite regret.
Come on, you can't say that and not tell me what happened. Are we under the, has it been more than 7 years? I mean, you can't get in trouble for it now.
That story is probably, it's a really good story, especially told from other people that were there. We're bracket racing on the freeway, kind of coming up next to each other, jamming the brakes to like take the stripe by the least amount.
Yeah.
I jammed the brakes in the little Vega, short wheelbase. It had a 9-inch rear with big rear brakes, locked them up, and it never recovered. For all the things I think I can do in a race car, including, you know, barreling the smoke off the tires at 70 miles an hour ground speed and still maintaining control, I could not get control back in that car. And I hit the embankment off a 205 and flipped it on its roof and hurt my back a little bit. And bad story, makes me look a little juvenile, but
dude, we've all done it. I've wrecked plenty of cars, man. It just I have 1,000 of those stories of, did I really do that when I was 20, whatever? I mean, did I really pull that off?
Yeah.
Going from the Vega, now I was kind of giving a hard time at the beginning because I was a body and paint guy. And I was a body and paint guy in the late 80s, early 90s. So I know all about the colorful rainbows of race cars in those days. It was just the way it looked. Now, the Camaro you have now, the 67, I did as much research as I could back in the day. Was that the same car? Is it the same car that was painted with the crazy 80s graphics that you have now?
It is not.
It is not. Okay, is so not. Let's start with that car. Where Mustang guys, don't hang me when you listen to this, but when did you get your first real car, which was a Camaro? I mean, you know I'm a Camaro guy, so I'm going down that path.
Well, it's funny. I would not classify myself as a Camaro guy.
What?
I would classify myself as a Chevelle guy.
Really?
My 67. I had a Monte Carlo, which is kind of like a Chevelle in my world. And then we have this El Camino now for Brody. My dad had a 66 El Camino and another. So my first Camaro I bought in 2006 from a good friend, Terry Geezy, who had bracket raced it and ran Super Street with it and all that other stuff.
Okay.
And I'd had an El Camino actually prior to that I ran the stock Eliminator for a couple of years.
Okay. I didn't know this stuff. Yeah. I get it. I've had a bunch of G bodies. I've had a couple Elcos. I had a really cool wagon. I just assumed once a Camaro guy, always a Camaro guy, but it's okay. There's just a little chink in the armor. It's okay.
I also had a G-body wagon, 2002 to 2006, I guess it was.
Dude, one of the best cars ever made. Nobody realized. Now, mine, if you believe it, had a 231 with a 3-speed in it. Try finding that combo again.
Yeah.
Keep going. 19
second quarter mile. Yeah.
What's your dial? A long time. Keep going with this first Camaro. That's where I want to pitch off. Cause that, to me, if I'm not mistaken, this is where stuff starts to take off is the first. Now, is there another Camaro? Is it the one that was, we're going to call it the Rainbow. We can call the Jeff Gordon Camaro. I don't know.
I actually like that paint job. It's a classic 80s. Like, it's a good retro look now if you wanted to go retro. But
I will not deny that. In the time, man, people probably ogled that thing. In 2024, go get your fanny pack and get that thing out of here. So the first Camaro. Now you've got that car. What was that car set up like? I mean, was it set up very similar to the silver car now? What was going on with that car?
Kind of similar. It had a basically a 355 in it that it ran 10, 30, something like that when I bought it. Blew it up within a couple months. Then I built a 377 for it that ran like 10 O's, 10 20s, you know, depending on weather and all that. But yeah, it was a great car. Actually, funny story, the first race I bought it from Terry, went to the Lucas Oil race at Woodburn. First round, I missed a perfect run by 2/1000ths of a second.
Oh,
I was 1/1000 red and 1/1000 quick.
I was going to ask, when you said it that way, it had to have been the wrong just 2/1000. Oh.
So here I am with this new car, have not raced with a delay box in 9 years, something like that. And
oh, so you were running Super Pro in the car. Okay.
Yeah, initially. But I bought it really to take the box out and run non-electronics Pro or whatever. But the next weekend, the next race was Nightfire in Boise, Idaho.
That's a big event.
Yeah. Take the delay, or I have the delay box transition from Pro Tree to Top Bulb. And I don't know what business I thought I had competing in a race like that with a brand new car and no seat time in it. But I went out there and I won Bracketeer, which is a big deal. I mean, it's still with the history of Nightfire on the very first day.
Wow. So that was kind of like me walking into Night of Fire Woodburn, like, oh, fuck, this shit's easy, man. What do you mean? I let it off. I push a couple scramble buttons in the box. I let go on the top bulb and shit, I win, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that easy. We know that for sure. So that was kind of the history of the start of that car. And then by the end of that year, I took the box out of it and just tried running bottom bulb just to make sure everything was good. And then the next year was 2007 and 2008. I traveled a lot. I competed a lot with that car, and it won a lot of races. So
that's cool, man. Yeah. That's cool. And then at some point this car goes by and then you turn into the silver car, or was it always silver?
It was always that way. So the rest of the history with the first car.
I want to know this.
I won Pomona, the world national championship in pro bracket.
That was 08.
08.
Yeah. 08. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And I raced it again in 09 with the number one on the car. I didn't have as much success in 09, just a lot of different reasons I can attribute it to. But I think I was getting a little burnt out. I hit the traveling and everything pretty hard in 2007 and 2008. So.
Well, it's tough. I mean, dude, it's tough for me to go to Woodburn from Oregon City.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can't even imagine doing that kind of traveling.
Yeah. So the end of 2009, sold it to a friend of mine, Chris Johnston. And then I took a little bit of a break. Started a family. Jody and I met at the end of 2008. In fact, she was in Pomona with me when I won the national championship. Oh, so
I thought you were going to tell me she was like the cute trophy girl or something. Then you just like did the Richard Petty
still
honor.
To this day.
Very well said. Nice. That's a good move right there. So you take a break, obviously start a family, you know, I get that. I've been there. I'm now an empty nester. You know, what do? I go out in my garage and dick off. I don't know what to do. But then at some point, obviously there's an itch to scratch.
Yeah.
And it's time to go back to racing. Where do you find that crossroads? You're like, okay, I got to do this again. Obviously you had already had what really is the ultimate success in bracket racing. Yeah, we all wish that we were running 12,000 horsepower, you know, top fuel cars, but let's be real. I think bracket racing is just as tough, if not tougher. I mean, all you gotta do is let go of the handbrake. Hopefully you don't blow up with nitro. But I'm just saying that there's every weekend, all those, like all you guys that, it blows me away when I talk to guys that did it when Portland was so heavy into racing.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go down there and watch, you know, geek out once in a while. But, man, there was guys, they were fanatic, man, Wednesday night. Yeah. And then either they go Wednesday, Saturday at Portland, or they go down to Wednesday night and then down to Woodburn Friday and Saturday, Sunday maybe. I mean, you guys were banging it out day after day after day. And then on top of it, jobs, life, mm-hmm. family, chores. How do you balance all that, man?
Well, I was single prior to.
Oh, okay. Well.
So that was a lot easier back then. But it was, my work was and still is pretty demanding. So, but I really only had two things. I had work and I had racing. I didn't have much of a social life except for racing social life and work social life, I guess, to some degree. So it was more difficult, obviously, once I started a family. The kids have started growing, so I'm getting into it more again. Ashley races. We'll talk about that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I'm getting a little more time to dedicate to it, and the results are starting to demonstrate that. So the itch, going back to the question about, you know, the looking at another car, my friends, David Chun and Nick Shepard, they're the ones that kept that itch going. So the years that I had taken off, they'd put me in their car for a race or two, and I'd get in there and I had success in their cars. I mean, I won in Dave's Dragster. I won in Nick's Nova. Actually, the first time I ever got in the seat in Nick's Nova, he was in Washington, D.C. on vacation with April. I was collecting points for him at Woodburn. So,
oh, that's cool. That's cool.
But yeah, I mean, it was just a light schedule and a lot of fun.
So you're kind of like the hired gun.
Right.
Yeah. You've heard me say it many times. My car's never been the problem. It was the doof in the driver's seat. I could have put any of you guys in that car and you would have done just as good as you would in any car. That really shows testament to your ability to be malleable in the sense of a drive, because you've run dragsters and stuff too, right? Didn't you?
Yeah, I was Sean's dragster.
That's a completely different world. I mean, I did a little of that at Frank Hawley's drag racing school because I happened to be good friends with Frank, and he's like, I did the door car thing. He's like, you want to run the dragster? I'm like, yeah. And that is a weird, weird feeling when the car is what seems like 38 feet out in front of you, but yeah. It shows some real testament to your driving skill that your malleability, as I use the word again, the ability to drive anything, it still comes down to these basic skills of I can get in the car. So I'm going to know where the controls are. I can look at the lights. I know what the car's going to do. I can look over and play the top end game and be successful, man. That shows that's the thing that comes with so many people I met that do what you do. It's that experience. It means so much, especially in my opinion, to bracket racing.
Yeah. To me, that's the challenge and the joy of it. Like, you know, everything from a 19 second Cordoba to a 7 second dragsters, you know, I've driven those, and each have their own challenges and each have their own advantages. But figuring out, you know, how you can win and no matter what you're in is part of the challenge and the joy of it. So,
yeah. Let's get more into the current car as we're going through the timeline. This car, I mean, one, now, this is me. Come on, man, I'm me. I can't help but be me. It's the second best looking car at the track. You knew I was going to say it. I will, we can have a, we'll put a ballot box out in the, maybe out at the little raffle tower.
Sure.
What the best looking silver Camaro at Woodburn is, and we'll let the crowds decide.
I guess it depends on whether you like a third gen or a first gen.
There, that's a split right there, man.
Your car's beautiful,
and it's yours. I know that we both looked at each other's cars. Anytime you want to trade, I'm in. You know, but let's go through some of the development on that car, like where, because that car is now, and the way I look at it, it's a lethal weapon at this point. Like I don't know how much. I mean, race cars are always something you work on to fix, tweak, make better. At this point, that seems like that car is at the point where it's not anything more than the scalpel it's become. Now it's just, I go there, and as you said, I look at my competition, I do what I do, and hopefully the light of the other track comes on. The development of that car, I mean, is there really anything left to do to it? I mean, how did it all come to fruition?
There's always something left to do to a race car, right? The story of that, I was looking, like, after a few years away, I needed a race car. Like, I just needed, it's part of my...
You said that, by the way. I needed a race car.
Identity. And Jody recognized it as a need as well. So we started looking, and Ken Winley in Idaho had the Camaro for sale as a roller with a transmission and converter. And my friend, Chris Johnson, who I'd sold my old Camaro to, had looked at the car closely. Talked to him. He says, you just need to go look at it. You're going to love it. Go look at it. And I did. I bought it and then slowly started, you know, building it to what it is now. Started with the 355 Brodick's had a small block that ran like 10.40s, 10.50s. A
friend. So it was stout out of the gate, right?
Yeah. A friend of David Chun's actually sold the engine out of a car that he had bought. So ran that for a few years, and then I bought a 400, just something I found off of Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. I can't remember. That's when it started running like, you know, low 10s, high 9s. Kept massaging that. Had Wes King over in Idaho. I don't know if you know who Wes King is.
I don't.
He's a cylinder head guru.
Okay.
So he took my dart heads and intake manifold, did some magic, and pretty soon I was running the 9s. I actually went as fast as 969 with that 406.
That's in it now?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Prior to that. So I had some issues with just let's say bearings and different things with that motor. So I ended up buying 3 years ago, or I've ran the last 3 years, this 434 that I have now. And it's a part getting freshened up. But I've been 970 with that motor without hopping it up or anything. And I have a bet right now with David Chun.
Okay.
That it
this will, ought to be interesting.
Yeah. That I think it'll go faster than 955. And he says, no way. So we have a nice little bet in place to see what happens.
So it's a 434. I can guess in my head what the horsepower is going to be. I'll just, you know, that's always the, you know, the racer secret. How much is that? If you don't mind me, how much does your Camaro weigh? Because it's not light. Like my car, nobody believes that it weighs like 2,400 pounds.
Is it that light?
Yeah. I got a picture of the scales.
Without you.
Oh, God, yeah. No, that's an easy 300. No, come on, man. That's bare bones, no fuel, no nothing.
Yeah.
You put my fat ass in the driver's seat, that's 300 pounds like that. Yeah. What's that car weigh? It's got to be close to 3,000, or if not over.
Yeah, I have ballast and two batteries and different things. I run it typically at 3,180 pounds.
955, that's a motor that's making some power.
955, it'll weigh about 3,100 when I try that.
Yeah. So. Well, a lot of that, I mean, I have, the way the car takes off is so fluid. That's one of the things that, again, I have all these next steps to learn, right? And when I watch, I mean, like that video I did with us, right? Like my car, for lack of better ways to put it, it's boring looking. I mean, it's, you know, I'm excited. My friends are excited for me, but when it takes off, it's like people, you know, it's not wheels in the air, you know. That car of yours launches. One, it points the freaking nose at the sky, which I know if I ever get my car to do that, it's going to scare the crap right out of me. But it is so fluidly smooth in the way that it makes a pass. You see guys that go up in the air sometimes, not picking on Stewart, like, sometimes his car is smooth as glass. Sometimes I don't know how the frame isn't like an apostrophe because it comes down so violently. Like, it's like, oh, God. And, you know, but he's got, he don't care.
He's done so many thousands of laps that way.
He don't care at all.
Yeah.
Your car seems to always be so fluidly smooth. Are these things and skills that you've learned along the way to make it so that car can do that? Because that's a whole nother art.
Sure. I have a lot of help with that. Tom Slama and his daughter Lizzie Slama at Dabney's Alignment and Brake.
Okay.
They're also the people who helped Maddie put his combination together in his Nova.
That would make total sense. Some
similarities, yeah. It's probably more about the front end than it is the rear end. So, it's good springs, good front shocks. Why am I drawing a blank on the name of the shock should be obvious.
Well, I got Vikings in mind or something like that. I don't know. I'm going to get this guy's number. I'm going to be like, you want to work on a third gen? You know, because
he does. I mean, you know, they've worked on Corey Seekin's car now. Corey does. He has a four link and he likes to keep the front end down, but they've worked on a lot of people's cars out of the track now and always with good outcomes. And I mean, it's not just doing the wheelie. It's landing smooth and safely, braking smooth, having your car just squat down square at the finish line, especially with bracket racing, what we do. So there's a lot of confidence I gain in racing from having it spend time at Dabney's.
Well, that, I mean, we've talked about that. Now, I'm not going to say who told me or who said this, because again, it's all camaraderie, But, you know, I've had a couple of people like, well, you know, there ain't a drip of fluid in the shocks of that Camaro on the front. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. If that thing does what it does that smooth, there's some kind of combo going on there that's just the right one. I think that's just, you know, that's racetrack banter having some fun. Yeah. But I know that I've leaned on the front of your car, and it's like, that ain't like my car. That doesn't do what my car does. My car feels like a brick. And, but I, again, mine does, I want to, I'd love to do that. Cause I know, what do you think professionally, we're kind of diving off into a little more of a tuning thing than the story about you, but if that car launched like my car versus your car, cause I think you're on the same, I'm on an 11.5. What do you want, a 10.5 or a?
No, I'm on a 14.
Oh, so you're on an even bigger tire. Okay.
The Hoosiers are 13.5, but whatever.
Okay. But a little bit big tire than me. What do you think the difference is between just pure ET, not winning, not playing the game, not lights, all that? Is that worth a tenth, a couple tenths? Because obviously that weight transfer, when the car really does it right, it is a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah. Most people tell me doing a wheelie, you actually lose ET because your front end's in the air. If you carry it a ways, then you're getting wind resistance,
sure,
which makes sense, and it's wasted energy, it's wasted horsepower moving the car up instead of moving it forward. So I do it mostly because for the consistency, but probably mostly, if I'm being honest, is just because it's a kick in the ass.
You know,
there's no better feeling other than wind lights. There's no better feeling in racing than doing wheelies.
You know, I would akin that to my two favorite things in cars are huge cam, huge compression. I would say that the combination would be huge wheelie, huge wind light. It's like, okay, so we do window tinting, right? That's what I do. Really, people go, well, why do you tint your front windshield? And I can tell them because of this and that and UV and all. And I'm like, because it fucking looks cool. Because it fucking looks cool, yeah, man.
Absolutely. We got to be honest with ourselves at some point.
Look, there is nothing better. Now, yeah. A picture of you coming out of the hole, and it's in a frame thing, and that's a, you know, an event win. That picture on a wall looks a lot better if the front end's pointed 45 degrees up in the air. Yeah. I mean,
it also looks better in your sponsor's wall.
Well said. Well said. Now, before we pull out the jewelry, I want to also talk about your connection with your family. You have done something that she just wasn't into it. I can lead a horse to water. I got her to sit in a junior dragster once and they started it. She was like, out of there, like oil and water. That's fine. But your daughter, Ashley, has really become one more person that probably looked at me like a duck. You're probably like, okay, man, Ashley, go up and race that guy right there. Go and race that guy. We know you're going to do. No, I'm kidding. But she has become a very accomplished driver as well. I've only seen her run in the Malibu and then the Corvette, which is probably, man, I tell you, we were talking about the prettiest car out there. I have a thing for that particular year of Corvette. That 73. Is 73. Yeah. Endura nose, classic rear. That is my favorite C3 there is on the planet. And when I first saw that car, I'm like, oh, man. Oh, you got to be kidding me. And then I see it's with you guys. I'm like, oh, now I know it's fast, too. But talk about that relationship with how racing has now become a family affair. Because it is, when I'm running around in my scooter at Woodburn, it's one of the coolest things to go by when it's, because you pit with a lot of the same guys like I do. And we travel around in the pits and say hi to everybody. But you've got this great, amazing crew that brings it all together. And as much as we love turning on the wind lights, it's also that thing at the track, man. It's that family deal.
Yeah, absolutely. It is family. And it's our obvious, you know, blood family, but it's our racing family as well. With my family, we started with Ashley and her brother Tanner, teaching them, you know, junior dragster. Neither one really went for it. Neither one initially, like, it just wasn't their thing. They hadn't been around it. They didn't understand the sport. You know, it was new to them because we were a new family. They're, you know, my stepkids kind of thing. Ashley, I think, got into it more out of connection with our friendships, like the people at the track, or like the Chun family and Cooper and Nick Shepherd and, you know, Dustin Ward, like all the people at the track that are friends of ours, she enjoyed the social aspect of racing and decided she wanted to give it a try again. So we,
so she's kind of down there. Everybody's hanging around. Everybody's having a good time. And then everybody's also tightening the belts. And she's, wait a minute, I want some fucking belts to tighten too. What's going on around here?
Yep. And it's funny because her first time in the junior, when I was tightening the belt, she goes, that's too tight. And I said, there's no such thing. Like if we can get more, that's good. Cause then you're not going to move around.
No, man, I'm on mine to where I'm like, I'm breathing out. It's like, get them on that tight. Yeah.
Especially as a parent, you want to make sure that they're buckled in there.
That is something I never got to that point, but that had, you know, even at 60 miles an hour and the whatever, I think they do run eighth, but it's still got to be a little, you know, because I've seen those kind of veer off and I don't even want to watch. And
yeah,
it's got to be a little, I don't know, just not disheartening, but, you know, pucker moment. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah. So it is, especially like in a big car, when you're in the passenger seat with them, you have some ability to guide during.
You can do the mob. You can do the mob. You can put the arm out, the mob. Yeah.
Okay. Kill the ignition, whatever. In the junior, you're sending them out there on their own, and you hope that you remember to tell them and everything. And my kids will tell you that I'm not the best coach. I think I can teach better people that have been around a lot better than I can teach new racers. So that was nerve-wracking for sure.
You've heard me say it down the racetrack, the better off dead moment. Go that way really fast. If something gets in your way, turn. It's like that would be my coaching. And don't let go of the steering wheel. But that is great, man. Cause like I said, she's running super pro in the white Corvette, right? Am I correct in that?
She's running stock Eliminator.
Oh, stock Eliminator. Oh, yeah. Excuse me. Yep. So when she's out there, it's more like just hot laps for practice or what? I'm sorry, I'm naive on this.
Yeah, well, let me back up for her racing career. She did the junior for 1 year. David Chun, pretty wise racer, obviously.
Guys, like making grown men cry.
When she turned 16, he says, why would you put her out there in the junior with all these kids that have been doing it? Like, get her in high school, get her in sportsman. So he actually offered up the El Camino, the brown El Camino that –
okay.
And their family that so many people drove.
Dude, that thing is, I have video of me racing that car.
There you go.
That thing, that car's probably made more passes than everything out there.
It might have. Usually there's someone in it, or it was someone in it every year of Night of Fire, all that stuff. So she won a high school track championship in that. And then Nick Shepherd had a little S10 that he had bought and put together. And so long story short, like they were more mentors to her for racing because I wasn't necessarily a good coach, or maybe dads can't coach as good, or, you know,
it's a tough relationship because, you know, you and I know that you can look at your daughter and say, do ABC. And they're like, no.
Yeah.
The guy right next to him, you know, it could be you and David. And David goes, no, do ABC. Oh, okay.
All of a sudden they hear.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, my dad, he's a dumbass. He doesn't know what I'm talking about. I get that. So there was the S10, but then where's the Malibu fall in? White Malibu, because that G-body fan all the way, the Malibu comes in. Where's that come in?
We found, I think actually Chun might have seen it on Facebook or something, said, look at this. So it's like a $4,000 running car with a 9-inch in it and everything else. The motor was junk, but
that's a rip though.
Yeah, exactly. So we put that together, took it all apart. Actually, Grandpa Al Griggs was helping, took it apart that winter, and he's not a car guy, so we had it completely apart. No drivetrain, no interior, no nothing. It was just a shell basically. And he looked at it and says, I have no idea how this thing's ever gonna run again.
You're like, oh God, what'd I do?
So,
well, obviously it did.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she won a high school track championship in that, and then ended up winning the Division VI high school championship.
I looked that up. I saw that. That was cool.
Yeah. So she's got a big Wally, and has continued to do well in the Malibu. In fact, last year at Night of Fire, she brought her Corvette out. She was going to run it for night at bracket racing, her stock limit.
There was something with the brakes or something, wasn't it? Something like it wasn't the pressure the ring or something.
It busted the ring and pinion.
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah. Okay. I remember, I don't know. I think in passing, I heard something about the brakes were giving
when
you problems.
When she was testing, it's got dual rear calipers, and you got to get the pressure pumped up in the calipers, otherwise they won't grab. So
I do remember that. I was joking about she needs to come to the gym with me and do leg day more often. That was right. I remember that.
I think your legs would have a problem.
I could probably push it. If I can put 845s on both sides of the leg press, I think I could. Really? So driver opportunity. No, I'm kidding.
You couldn't fit in it.
No. I've looked at that car. No. It's funny. It was like my car. I don't know if you ever met Jerry. You know who Jerry is, the guy I bought it from.
I don't.
He is probably about 5'9 and about 145. When I bought that car, I could barely get in it to back it out of the garage. I had my head all kinked over like this, and I'm trying to steer it, get it in gear. No, I would not fit in the Corvette, but I could chop some of that out and make it work. No. So as you're progressing with that, obviously now you're one of those, I don't know, encampments that I see. And I'm always very jealous of, you know? I mean, I know I got my little spot. I've been working on it. Last couple of years, a lot better. But I know right where you pit. I know right where you guys are always going to be. Once in a while, you're somewhere different. But you're always in that one spot. And it's just, it's neat. I don't think people realize. I think the average person looks at drag racing, if they've never been around it, for sure. And it's certainly not in this part of the United States. I mean, we all know, but I think they look at it like we're just a bunch of toothless rednecks out there, you know, playing. There's a guy in the back playing the banjo, and you know, we got a 3/4 race came. We're gonna go to Woodburn. It's like, you know, dude, listen, it's so much more than that, and that's what makes it so cool to see that stuff. I watch it and I pay attention to it. And if you notice, I'm always running around on my scooter by myself. I'm not really stop. I stop and talk once in a while, but I'm really just riding around looking, observing, at that stuff.
Learning.
And it's neat to do that, man. And it's one of those things that you hope you pass down. I mean, I would think that there's a master plan for you, that somewhere down the road, you're then Grandpa Steve and the great grandkids are out there, and maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe Ashley's running the Camaro, maybe your grandson's running it. Who knows where that goes? But do you see that being something that now that you did it, you grew up around it, you learned with Dad, you took a little break, the itch came, now I'm back in it, and do you see it being something that you will never walk away from now?
Absolutely. I hope that's what it is. And I hope, you know, all of our kids, like Tanner's not into it, which is cool. Like they're into their own thing, right? I hope Brody gets into it. We have an El Camino now that we're doing. So he's going to start running Junior Street. Ashley is all in. In fact, when her Corvette broke at Night of Fire last year, she ended up in the final. And the only reason she lost was because Stewart put together a near perfect run.
I remember that he went trip zip and like
-1,000.
Yeah.
Oh, she was 006 and got there first, 9,000, and was not close because his run was so good. So
you can't fault that. I mean, you can't like be like, oh, you know.
And she did that after her car breaks. Like she's rock solid mentally. Yeah. But absolutely, like even retirement planning, we plan for this. Like, if I'm not competitive and I shouldn't be in the scene anymore, I still want to be involved in racing and support the kids and still be out there with our friends. And it is absolutely a part of the budgeting in retirement that we can afford to support the kids in their endeavor. So
I will tell you this. I don't know exactly how old Stewart is. How old do you think Steve is?
He's getting Social Security now, so he's probably 63, something like that.
Then all that says to me, you know, that tells me I got 10 years minimum before I even have to think about it. I will give up my race car when I see Steve Stewart not or you pulling the front wheels off the ground, because I think I'm actually older than you, aren't I?
No, I'm older.
Are you older than me?
I'm 56.
Okay, well, I mean, we're right there. We're Gen Xers, man. We were 15 when we were 30 when we were 15, and we're still 30.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't care if they got to pour me into that car, old rickety bones, and everything's automated and electronic and air shifted. As long as I can let go of the trans brake, I'm good, man. Just. Don't let any of the rules guys see me do this, but just pour me in the car at 82 over in the grass, roll me up there, keep a fan on me, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
I love to hear that, man. Now let's talk about the success, man. I mean, I am the greenest of green. I give credit where credit is due. I am extremely jealous of all kinds of people. I don't know. I mean, I've met so many different champions. I'll tell you, I'll give you an example. The reason why I got, Dixon's pictures all over my office in here is when he won his second championship, for some unknown reason, like a lot of people in the automotive industry, some of them just liked me. I mean, that's great. That's cool. Maybe some didn't. I don't know. I don't care. But for some reason, he always was super nice to me. He'd call me, he'd text me, because one day we had a bet that if he ever won another championship, I don't know if you ever seen one of those big-ass championship rings. Yeah. I made a bet with him one time that if you win your third championship, you can't wear all three, so I get to wear one of them for a year. The funny part was the one from the second year fit on my ring finger.
Wow.
And I swore up and down, and I still to this day, if he ever wins another championship somewhere by hook or crook, I'm cashing that ticket in. Which brings me to something that's sitting, God, I hope one day, with my name on it. You got to pull that thing up here and put it on the table. Now, you got to be easy on the table here, but look at that. Man, that is, now listen, the guys have won the little smaller Wallys at Woodburn, dude. There ain't nothing taken away from those. I'd take one of those. God, please, drag racing God, shine upon my old ass, and I'll take one of those and wear it like Flavor Flav around my neck. Sitting in this studio right now. I mean, that is, dude, what does that, that's a Wally, man. That's a Wally.
It's a national event. Wally, national championship Wally.
I don't know whether to smile, cry, or freak out. To me, that is like...
Why don't you just grab it?
Dude, oh God, I've never held a real one. Holy shit. I mean, that is beyond. I mean, someday, I want to...
It represents a lot of commitment and hard work and...
I'm just going to hug this thing for a second.
Learning is what it really represents.
You got to, now listen, you're not getting off that easy. I'm going to put that right there, just like that, okay. So people can look at that. That is so much. I mean, hey, everybody knows me, man. I rarely have a loss for words, okay?
You don't.
I never have a loss for words, let's be real. Dude, that is beyond, man. I mean, I am absolutely, positively, without a doubt, sure, the moment that went in your hands, you can close your eyes and be there like that. What was that like, man?
Absolutely. Anytime I see this or we start talking about it, it's not just that moment. It's all the things that led to that moment. The drive down with my dad and his friend, Mike Francis, who towed my trailer and race car down to Pomona. My dad isn't around anymore, so, spending that time with them, the years prior growing up, with my parents and everything. But this trip in particular, I had David and there's just everyone was there, right?
Yeah, so you're not only doing this, you're surrounded by everyone you want to be.
Yeah. And a lot of those people were there in Vegas again this year where I tried to repeat it, which I fell a little bit short. But, it's coming off the end of the track. I had never won one of these. So they point you over. You go over to the left.
Oh, I get to go left, right. I don't get to go over here. Yeah.
And when you get out of the car, they got a hat for you and the Wally. And there's cameras there and photographers and it's a different level of attention, I guess. And I don't even know where to look. Like, I hold the trophy up. I have no clue.
It's right out of the... What do I do with my hands?
Yeah,
what do exactly. I do with my hands? You're like, the car ran really good today. I don't know.
Yeah. And really, none of my family and friends, like, everyone's on the starting line. So, nobody is there. So all I want to do is go hang with them and celebrate with them. And
was it at the top end then?
Yes.
Oh, it was. Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
The track. As soon as you come off the end of the track.
So they all see you win.
Yeah.
Holy shit moment of a lifetime.
Yeah.
And hopefully more. And all of a sudden you're 1500 feet away and they're all like, what the fuck is going on?
It took a while for everyone to get there, but it was cool.
I look at, to me, I've always tried to keep, listen, everybody who really, really knows me knows I'm very honest about this. Listen, I got a giant ego. Okay. Mm-hmm. I do. I admit it. You have to. In certain parts of your life.
Yeah.
I am always so humbled and so brought down into a center when I get to, even in this moment, share a little of that. Because it's, you said it best. It's that strive and the work that it takes to get there. That 990 or whatever it was, I don't know what it was, doesn't matter. You're 990 at 136. Had nothing to do with it when you saw that light come on. Because I shouldn't knock on it because it makes funny sounds and nothing, but I hope one day I get to do that. If I don't, so be it. I'll be a happy racer all day long. Hell, man, my goal for next year is just to get out of the fucking first round every weekend. But that is one of those things. And then... you take it from the experience where I gush over your experience. You can always look back on that and share it for the rest of your life. To put it into perspective, what do these guys do that are, they got 30 of them?
I know some of those people. They're good friends and they're mentors of mine. Those are the people I look up to. Jody Lang, Brad Plurd, like those, the success those guys have had.
How do they look at him? I have to say, nice question, Dennis. But you having that relationship with those people, do they look at every single one the same way?
Oh, no. I think each individual win is there's a different story to each one, right? And I will say that I don't think they have perspective on their accomplishments yet. Like, I think that...
What do you mean by that?
They're still striving. They haven't reached whatever. They haven't won every race that they want to win yet.
Okay.
They haven't looked back. They're still looking forward. And so while all those Wallys and all that success is evident to the rest of us, it probably isn't always on top of mind to them. So
that makes total sense. I'm not going to stop racing my silver Camaro because I have one.
Yeah.
No. I'm taking baby steps, man. I mean, everybody that I met down there said, listen, especially the people that tried to, you're going to, the first 3 or 4 years, man, just get down at, foot level and take that boot in the teeth because it's going to take some learning experience. Yeah. And now I feel like I've turned that little corner and I can start. Like I said, my goal is literally, my whole goal for 2024 is don't go out in the first fucking round. That's it. If I went to second round every single Sunoco pro bracket race, which I don't know if you know this, but I already signed up. I'm going to go pro and super pro. Literally for reps. I'm like, fuck it. I'm going all in.
All right. And you need, in my opinion, you need to focus more on the process than results. So not losing first round is a result. You're going to get your ass kicked at some point.
I know.
And you're probably going to lose first round. So focus on the process and set a goal of my average reaction time is going to be this. I'm not going to choke first round and lose the race because I choked.
It's a good point.
All those, like, focus on performance and the process of being better rather than the results. The results will get you down sometimes if you're not having good success. So,
well, I mean, even if you go, the guy does better next year, you can't control what you can't control.
Exactly.
And believe me, if there's a guy I'm going to take advice from, it's probably the one with the Wally on the fucking table. I mean, just saying, might be good advice to take.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I say that you're right. I am looking at process. I am looking at it's all. I mean, I've told everybody it was the peephole in the visor, and all of a sudden I'm not going red. All of a sudden I'm 015 to 040. What the? Is that all I had to do?
Magic.
And it was this one little stupid thing. And it's funny how, I mean, you know, and don't get me wrong. All of a sudden, I'm not a champion. Now I got to start to even try to learn the fucking top end. Holy crap, that's a whole nother
that's
game.
Where the magic happens.
That's, yeah, I mean, I will be very upfront in whatever you want. But listen, my whole strategy to run Super Pro was one reps. And as you really said, in my real mind is, I want to go through the same process of letting that car out of the hole with the same steps I do in pro and try to do reaction times.
So are you running Super Pro this year?
I am going to run Super Pro.
Oh, wow.
I'm dead serious.
Wow.
And cool. I mean, and my whole game plan is, so there's no mistake if you can beat me doing this, because a lot of couple people are like, you're fucking stupid doing this. I am not going to lift. I am just going to light, let it go, flat out. I'm not going to lift. I'm not going to look. I'm not even going to fucking, I'm not even going to try to play the game, because I can't fucking play the game in the quarter mile. I mean,
what if they're sitting on the starting line?
God damn you.
Some people have break or whatever. You got to use your mirrors.
I'm probably saying shit I'm not going to do, but my general game plan is I'm doing it for reps and I'm doing it to cut good lights. I'm not really going to concern myself with trying to play it at the top of the eighth. I'm going to try to just work on taking the data from the reps on the line and where my eighth mile and arp and speed is at the eighth, so I can better dial and have data for pro.
Okay.
That's really what it is. And I figure if I'm going to spend another $75 an entry, maybe another jug of C16, it's worth it to me if I can. Well, really, I know what you said about the results things, and you're right, but I just got to get out of first round. I know that's a stupid goal, but I know that will, if I can do that through process and reps, I feel I can do better. I can be one of the guys that is regularly there and regularly performing and regularly having success.
Sure.
If, like I said, I wouldn't care. I'm dead serious. We can play this back this time next year. If I get out of first round every week of the Sunoco Pro and that's all I do the whole year, I will tell you I already have one of those. That's the way I'll feel.
Yeah, success.
Yeah, and maybe the year after that. Maybe in all that time, I've learned to watch who holds, who doesn't, who's jamming me, who's stabbing it, who's whomping, all this stuff. I probably got another 4 years to learn that shit now. And I'm cool with that because I am so jealous of that right now. If you were not my friend and not in my own home, I'd probably run with it down the hallway and try to take it from you. I am just amazing. Man, this has been an absolute great experience for me to have you down here. I really do take what you say as learning. Now, as two dads trying to teach other dads, maybe we're not teaching each other this way. But man, I just can't say thanks enough for coming down here, man, and just in spending some time with me and letting people hear some of the stories. We skipped over a couple, and that's okay. Because I think we touched on what really counts. I think we touched on the fact that when you grow up around it and you have great friends and you have great support and you have great just inner working inside, peace of mind, whatever that might be, man, this is a really cool sport that is really, really just one big family. And I know that everybody, every once in a while, people get into beef here, beef there. Hug it the fuck out, man. but I'm glad you came by, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's always good chatting with you. This is a little bit different format, but it's good to share my story, share my family story, talk about our friends, you know, our mutual friends, and racing. Bracket racing is, it means the world to me, and yeah. and you know, some other forms of race too, Lucas Oil or whatever. But yeah, it's a big part of who I am, and you know, big part of my life, really. So,
well, I can't say enough about you, man. I mean, like I said, you're my nemesis. You didn't know you were my nemesis. I have now shuffled that away because I you know, it was like the monkey off my back. I just got to, I mean, I beat that one guy that put me on the trailer so many times. And again, it was always in good favor and always in good spirits. And every time I rolled up there, I just wanted to try to beat the best. You are one of the best out there, man. And I appreciate the time coming by. If you know, I'm a geek because I do this stuff. I don't know if you've got a website or, you know, a Facebook page for the car, any of that, or do we need to work on that together?
Yeah, we probably do. We got our team name is Kelly Griggs Racing because okay. My father-in-law, Al, and the kids, you know, Jody's maiden name, they're a big part of it. They contribute in a lot of ways. They, you know, supporter their grandkids especially. But we don't have a Facebook page or YouTube channel or any of that stuff. We probably
work on that.
We'll get Brody going on it because he's a big YouTube guy.
Oh, then he's got to be on that. Because I think, you know, because listen, if you're listening to this or watching this or whatever you're doing, and you want your name on a car as a sponsor that's going to be going final round most of the time, don't call me.
Pass first round.
I got you covered on the sponsorship. You want a guy that's in the winner's circle, look him up, man. I just thank you so much, man. I think we'll call it the end and appreciate it, brother.
Yeah, appreciate it.